the State Senate Resources Committee. Today's date is February 25th, 2010. And we have Senator Stevens, Senator French, Co-Chair McGuire, and myself, Wilikowski. And today we have two bills before the committee, which we'll take up in the following order. SB 203, Cook Inlet Gas Storage Facilities by Senator French, and then SB 277, Public Utility Exemption by Senator McGuire. Senate Bill 203, the committee has heard this bill on a couple of occasions, last one being February 11th. Since then, Senator French and his staff have been working diligently with the administration to fine-tune the bill, make corrections. We have a new CS before us. I believe it is backslash
T?
P?
T.
T. T like tango. T.
Okay.
That's what I have.
I got T as well. Could I have a motion to adopt this for discussion purposes?
So moved.
All right. And could I please have either Senator French or your trusty staff explain the changes to us?
I'll invite, if I could, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Herring to the table, but I have...
if that is her name.
That's right. But she has prepared for me an explanation of the changes that I'm pretty good at reading, so I will do that just to walk you through it. But let me just start by thanking not only my staffer, Ms. Herring, but also Joanna Bales, Robin Wilson, Jim Greeley, Kevin Banks, and of course, Don Bullock. We spent a long hour, closer to an hour and a half in my office, working through point by point the concerns that they had about the bill. I believe we would address them, but let me just let you know what those are. First and maybe foremost is to make clear on page 2, lines 10 through 16, which storage facilities will be regulated by the RCA. There are many storage facilities out there now. There's probably two other wells out there now, more coming, and there's some concern, I think, on the part of the industry that the wells that they keep for their own purposes not be covered by the RCA. So what we did is make clear that the only storage wells regulated by the RCA are those wells that ask for and get a tax credit. That is, if they get state money to assist them in the construction and operation of the gas storage well, then they're regulated, otherwise not. So it's sort of an elective that, that each player in the gas storage arena can make for themselves. Second of all, the next two changes were both about concerns that the Department of Revenue had regarding double dipping. Page 2, line 24 and 26 makes clear that the credit under this section is applicable only to the first purchased construction or acquisition of a gas storage facility to make sure there's only one credit for, per facility. Likewise, on line 29, same page, we deleted cash expenditure or payment and inserted an expenditure incurred. That's language that they're just much more familiar and comfortable with respect to keeping track of those payments that will qualify for a tax credit. Finally, on or next on page 3, lines 18 to 26, we took out completely the provision requiring pre-authorization of credits. A taxpayer claiming a credit will do so when they file their return. This removes language specifying how a credit can be claimed, as this is done by regulation. It also eliminates a provision stating that the taxpayer has the burden of demonstrating compliance. According to the Department of Revenue, the taxpayer always has the burden of demonstrating compliance, and so the other language was could have been used to imply a special or additional burden. Finally, the CS deletes the provision granting the transfer of tax credit, though the carry-forward provision remains. Finally, on page 4, line 13, we took out the provision eliminating state property tax exemption from the bill. It just created lots of problems, and because the amount of state property tax owed by these facilities will be very small given the small amount of property they actually own on the surface, it just seemed better to eliminate it to make the bill more streamlined. So those are the changes.
Thank you, Senator French. Any questions for Senator French? Seeing none, anything to add, Kate?
No, for the record, this is Kate Herring, staff to Senator French. I think Senator French did a good job of explaining the changes, and we have Robin Wilson, I believe, online, and also our trusty drafter, Don Bullock, in the room if there are any questions about.
Okay, let's open it up for some comment. I don't believe we have anyone wanting to testify, but Robin, did you have any comments on the bill as it's written, the CS?
This is Robin Wilson of the Tax Division, and no, I have, I'm certainly available for questions, but I have no other comments.
Any questions for Robin? Seeing none. We also have Stuart Goring on the line from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And Stuart, did you want to testify on this? I have you down for questions. Anything come up that you want to chime in on?
Not at this time, although I am available for questions. Thank you.
Questions for the RCA? Seeing none. We have Kevin Banks in the audience. Mr. Banks, do you have any questions? Anything you'd like to add about this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kevin Banks. I just wanted to make one comment for the benefit of the committee. From a personal point of view, credits require that somebody do something. So I think that's a wonderful way of providing incentives. You're still pushing the string, but at least here you have some recourse to know that when you're sharing in the expense is being made. Also, with respect to the discussion about subjecting, if that's the appropriate word, a facility that receives this credit to RCA oversight, I think that's also a good idea in general. And I wanted to let folks know that the Department of Natural Resources, in dealing with leasing of new storage facilities, we have engaged with some of the applicants, all of these new applicants, with a proposal that they consider that they, in exchange for the right to store gas in state oil and gas leases, that they provide third-party access in some form or another. We have have tried to specify that, and that also that the fee that we charge will be some percentage of their cost of service, and we hope that that will try to create a price signal to the marketplace on the one hand, and also provide opportunities not just for the producer of gas who happens to have the good fortune of owning the oil and gas lease in which the storage lease will apply, but also give an opportunity to utilities and new producers, other producers, opportunities to make use of the storage with and frankly provide some stimulus to the growth of gas availability in the marketplace during the cold months of winter. That's all I wanted to say, sir, and
thank you.
But I'm here for questions.
Questions for Mr. Banks. Great. Administration opposed the bill, support the bill, neutral on the bill?
I think I'm supposed to say that we're neutral.
Okay. Great. Thank you for your testimony. All right. Anyone else in the room wanting to testify on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, anyone else online wanting to testify on this bill? Seeing none. This has been the third hearing on this bill. We've spent a lot of time on this. I know this sponsor has spent a lot of time working with the administration and trying to iron out the kinks that have been expressed. I think this is an important bill. This is certainly one that people of South Central should be very interested in, and it really could go a long way towards helping solve some of the problems that we're having with gas in Cook Inlet. So thank you, Senator French, for bringing this forward. Is there still an objection to the adoption of the CS? Okay, seeing the objection removed, the CS is adopted. Is there a motion on the bill? Does the committee have, what is the will of the committee?
Chairman, I'd go ahead and make the motion. I'll move that Senate Bill 203 be moved out of this committee onto the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the bill moves out of committee. Thank you. And while we're passing around the signature sheet, we'll move on to Senate Bill 277. And Mr. Pulaski, would you please come forward? I understand you have a CS for this bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do. For the record, my name is Mike Pulaski, and I'm an aide to Senator McGuire. Members in front of them should have 26LS1353/P.
Could I get a motion to adopt version P for discussion purposes?
So moved.
Any objections? I'll object for discussion purposes. Please present the changes that have been made.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The changes are found on page 2, following line 4. The substantive changes were made to line, to section 3 of Senate Bill 277. In the recent hearing, there were significant concerns raised by committee members about, first of all, the size of the projects that could be exempted from regulation under this bill. In addressing that concern, we took a few different approaches. The first is on line 9 through 10, and that was to say that really we're talking about facilities placed into service before January 1, 2016. This was to narrow the universe of facilities that this applied to a little bit, partly because of certain federal ITC credits that are out there for facilities that might be looking for renewable energy credits to get this work in the ground. The second is on page 2, line 11, to limit the size of facilities to those that generate less than 65 megawatts of electricity. Senator Stedman had raised concerns about large hydro projects being built without regulation, particularly with state money. And looking at that concern, finally we went down into lines 14 through 19, sub 3 under Q, and that being that a person that owns the plant or facility may not receive a grant that was used to generate the electricity from renewable energy resources or a tax credit related to the generation of the energy resources. So as long as the facility is not receiving tax credits and not receiving state grants, then the exemption from regulation is appropriate. But when there's state money being put into the project directly, that limitation is put on there. The fundamental point of the bill is still maintained in page 2, line 12 through 13, and that's that steps in the regulatory process where the power sales agreement and between the power producer and the consumers is regulated at the utility level, where the power producer will sell power to you to a utility. That power sales agreement must go up for approval by the commission. Mr. Chairman, those are essentially the changes, except for finally, more broadly throughout the section, there was some very legitimate concern raised about whether the original drafting was limited to a person versus a plant, and the goal really being to get to the plant. So the section has been redrafted to apply to the plant or facility rather than the person. So you limit it so that someone couldn't build, say, a 100% renewable project and then put a coal plant next to it and get the exemption because they were exempt from their previous version. Mr. Chairman, I just thank your office for working very closely with us on these changes and appreciate the constructive input. Yeah.
And I'd like to extend the same thanks to you and Senator McGuire's office. I appreciate the time you took in working with us on the concerns that had been raised. Thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I understand, the magnitude of a 65 megawatt plant, how many households are we talking about average? Is there another rule of thumb that might help me understand the magnitude of that kind of a plant?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, the 65 megawatts in terms of actual households, I'm not sure. But to put that into context, a lot of the generation in the rail belt, the larger generation, is in the range of 60 megawatts. The I believe the North Pole extension was a 60 megawatt plant. So within Alaska, those types of generation are fairly standard in size. The concern being, and where we looked at sizes, was looking at what the federal law provides for. Under FERC, there's a provision called qualifying facilities, where a facility can go and apply at the federal level and within certain sizes have exemptions to regulation. Those are 80 megawatt plants that are generated from renewable energy. And the goal at the federal level was to try and streamline the regulatory process. As far as wind, those are limited in my conversations with the FERC to 30 megawatts or less. Geothermal, any size. The real point being is that the consumer is protected at that power purchase agreement stage, but that the risk profile, as we heard in the last committee meeting, is very difficult for an investor to come in and invest in renewable energy because of the variable nature of it, the risk that's taken by the investor. To get back to your original question, that size of power plant is really fairly typical in the rail belt. They're not, on a lower 48 scale, they're extremely small projects. So the federal government would look at them as small the state would look at them as fairly large, but not into the big size of a Bradley Lake or something along that line, or a Chacachamna.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What is Bradley Lake? How many megawatts?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, off the top of my head, I'd hate to give a number that I'm not
sorry, I'm just having trouble
with.
Understanding the magnitude of
mm-hmm.
this.
Certainly.
And I could just say, I believe Bradley Lake is over 100,
yeah.
And I believe Chacachamna is proposed to be 360, and I believe Susitna is proposed to be anywhere from 400 till 900, 1600.
Yep.
The Mount Spur is proposed to be, I believe, 100 or 150. So
yeah.
Contains it to some of the smaller renewable ones?
The Siri project that was proposed would be 100 megawatts, meaning the underground coal gasification. That's about 10,000 households during regular non-peak use. So 65, I think, would be right around 5,000-6,000 households. But I think the concern about the large hydroelectric facilities is addressed in this way. The only other way would be to specifically carve out hydroelectric, which I think presents other concerns. So the idea was to say those that are not the massive, huge projects are not covered. But as Fish said, and I mean, you know, we're making compromises. We work with Senator Wilkowski's office, happy to do so. But the principle is that ultimate agreement between the utility and the consumer, if you will, has to be approved by RCA. And so that's the check that's in there. I mean, on a broader level, I hope the committee continues to look at this issue, because the federal government, as we know, I worry that what will happen is in our state that the renewable energy companies that have been drawn here and are attracted here may be discouraged. The current RCA process is onerous. It does take a long time and is an impediment. And when you have to go through it two times, you're adding on a number of years. My concern is that people are simply going to go to that federal process. I guess that's okay. But if they simply go directly to the FERC, they're exempted from all of it. Which is an interesting proposition. And the point behind that federal law is, again, to incentivize independent power production by renewable energy companies. And so, you know, once again, the philosophy is we want to get as much power produced out there in Alaska as possible, as much of it as possible, and let it come into the utilities, and then let the RCA go ahead and oversee that ultimate contract with consumers, but let's try and get as much in as possible. And in this case, a very real scenario where we may, after all of the good work we've done in the legislature and money that we've put in, end up killing a project by an extra layer of government, and that's unfortunate to see. So I'm happy to support and will continue to support the changes and the compromise that we have worked out, but I just encourage us to think at the broader level about what we want to do with respect to renewable energy.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Any other comments or questions by committee members? Yes, Senator French.
I, because of fog at the Juneau Airport, missed the first hearing on this bill, so I'm just getting a little bit up to speed. Are we going to hear from someone from the RCA today?
We have Mr. Goring online, actually, and we had some testimony last week. I believe he's online for questions, if you have questions. And he submitted some fairly comprehensive testimony.
It's coming to you next.
And it is coming to you next, Senator French.
But yeah, and you guys are all up to speed, so I need to get caught up, so I'm at least ahead of my committee members. What? Who's the person from the RCA?
We have Stuart Goring. Mr. Goring, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And thank you, by the way, for the really comprehensive testimony you submitted. It's really greatly appreciated by the committee, and it really helps us give a good analysis to this bill. Could you just put yourself on the record, and we may have some questions for you by Senator French.
Certainly. I am Stuart Goring. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I am representing the RCA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Goring, maybe you can just sort of begin by telling me what's what's the difference in having the RCA regulate a facility and having the RCA regulate a contract between a facility and a and by facility I mean something that makes electricity, the utility that buys that electricity. What's sort of the net difference? And by difference, I mean I guess looking at it from the point of view of the consumer?
Well, I think I'd need to begin by backing up and saying that typically 4205, the Public Utility Regulatory Act, generally speaks in terms of activities, not facilities.
Facility, okay.
So usually you're talking about an activity of something that someone's doing, furnishing electricity, furnishing natural gas, furnishing trash collection services, that sort of thing. So the concept of regulating or non-regulating a particular plant or facility is something that's not very common in 4205 as it now stands. So to some extent, what I'm going to tell you is a little bit theoretical. However, if a plant or facility was being otherwise a public utility and was therefore subject to regulation under 4205, the process of regulation begins with the issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity, which requires a showing that the utility operator is fit, willing, and able to provide the service, and that the service is in the public convenience and necessity. So there's kind of two layers to that CPCN process. And then once the utility is certificated after the determination, you know, based on a factual record that those standards have been met, then the utility would file a tariff for approval by the commission that specifies the terms, not just financial terms, but also all the rules and regulations under which service will be provided to the public. If a service provider of some sort, in this case someone who's providing electric power, is not regulated by the commission and instead wholesale or power contract was brought into the commission, right now, under existing law, that would be done under one of two possible. Regulations are not nearly as comprehensive as you would find in a review, for example, of tariff filing that a utility would make. The reason for that is that those
Can we just go off the record for a minute and try to get our communication problems resolved? Mr. Goring, sorry to interrupt you. We're just having some pretty bad interference.
I was hearing a lot of static, but I wasn't sure if that was just on the telephone or if that was also in the hearing room.
Yeah, it was everywhere. So go right ahead.
Were you able to hear everything that I had said up to this point?
Sure. Short answer is yes, but maybe you could just sort of clarify. I mean, it sounds to me like the issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity is more comprehensive than simply passing on a wholesale power agreement.
That would be a very safe assumption, yes. Wholesale power agreements, and I was getting to the process for that. Right now, wholesale power contracts with non-regulated vendors are covered by a regulation of 3AAC 52.70.
And we're losing you again, Mr. Goring, but
shut down all the other mics. Mr. Goring, you know what? Would you mind calling back in? We're going to go off the record, and maybe that's just the best policy.
I will call back in momentarily. Hold
okay,
on.
We're going to go off the record, and we'll just wait for you to call back in. Thanks. Mr. Goring, hopefully we'll have a little better connection this time. And I don't know if you recall where you were at with your testimony, but if you do, please go right ahead. Or if Senator French, you want to rephrase where you're at?
Mr. Goring, go ahead and continue if you remember where you were.
Yes, thank you, Senator French. And basically, as it stands now under existing law, a contract for the supply of wholesale power between a utility and a non-regulated vendor is covered by 3AAC 52.470E. And that particular regulation only requires that the utility file the contract with the commission. There is no requirement for prior approval.
And, of course, the filing of that contract may trigger someone who would file a complaint or something like that, that would, or the commission could investigate that on its own motion.
Let me ask you this. How many of those are there in Alaska? How many vendors out there sell electricity without having themselves applied for and gotten a certificate of public convenience and necessity?
I cannot give you a firm answer. What I can tell you is that those are typically small projects. A couple of examples, I think, that the engineering staff at the RCA has mentioned and that are recent dockets, actually, are, for example, small run-of-river hydro projects in the South Fork of Eagle River, and also another project out in the Mattsu Valley. And those are typically quite small.
Micro hydro projects.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Typically, the wholesale power sales agreements are between regulated utilities, and so those obviously. The other things that would come in, and those, by the way, are or at least could be qualifying facilities for the purposes of PURPA, and that's, I think, part of the reason why this particular regulation was written the way it was, is the assumption, I think, that these would be smaller projects and they would be PURPA regulated, and that's why the vendor is unregulated, because under existing law, anybody who provides power to a public utility for compensation, it becomes a public utility themselves. So the only way for them to not be a public utility is if they are a PURPA QF. Obviously, that particular regulation would have to be revisited if this bill is enacted into law in its current form.
Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Goring. Thank you, Senator French. Any other questions by committee members? Seeing none, is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Or, Mr. Goring, did you have anything else you wish to add?
No, thank you.
Great. Any other testimony online? Seeing none, any other testimony in the room? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony.
Taking at ease.
We're back on the record, and we've closed public testimony on Senate Bill 277. We do have a comprehensive list of concerns that have been raised by Mr. Goring. Fortunately, there is a judiciary referral. A lot of these are legal concerns and probably better addressed in committee that specializes in those things. So that we're all on, right? So can I get some, I guess I'm the one who objected. I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to adopting the CS? Okay, seeing none, the CS is adopted. What is the will of the body?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CS for Senate Bill number 277, version P, out of committee and onto judiciary.
Okay, are there any objections? Okay, the bill moves out of committee. And with that, we are adjourned. Please, members, stay until we can have everyone sign the signature sheet. Thank you.